Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvarez. But this week, Fred is on the road, although he'll be on a little bit later on. But we have our friend and colleague, the European golf guru, Kieran Clark, who, as he always do, make an excellent broadcast. So how are you, Kieran? How are you today?
I'm very well, Carlos. Thanks for having me on the show, as always. It's always a pleasure to come on and talk golf with you. And I actually was playing golf today, the first time in quite a while. I was hacking it around terribly around the Strathtyrum course at St. Andrew, which is one of the lesser-known courses at the home of golf. But it's fun to play. Kind of perfect shorter course, perfect for a complete duffer like myself. But that said, I made it look very hard. It was a tough old round for me today. I was struggling with a terrible hook off the tee. So, of course, as you know, Carlos, Fred is a certified golf instructor. So perhaps when the next time he comes on the show and I have a chance to talk with him, I could actually get some tips, because I certainly need it, because I don't think I even hit a fairway in regulation. It was that bad.
Oh my goodness! Well, he'll be on soon. Hopefully, we can get him to see if he can give you some recipes for that. You know, it's sacrilegious to be hooking in the home of golf. So I hope you can correct that. And it's not good. It's not a good thing. But anyway, we have a great show for you, because this is the final week of the PGA Tour season. And what does that mean? It's that the FedEx Cup is coming to an end. But to me, more important, and I know for you, Kieran, is Ryder Cup time. It's just the week after.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that as well. Who's going to be the last captain's pick? We're going to preview for you the Tour Championship, but that will be a little bit later on. Right now, we're going to start right away with our weekend backspin. And Kieran, you'll get the tee shot, and you're going to talk to us about In Jee Chan, who won the Evian Championship wire to wire in record-setting fashion. What was all that?
Well, it was a remarkable performance from her. She played just tremendously all 4 days, as you see, leading the tournament from start to finish, setting a new record for a major championship, men or female, and score in relation to par. And she actually beat the record set by Jason Day last year at the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits, and indeed the record set by Henrik Stenson this year at Royal Troon of 20 under par. In Jee Chan finished at 21 under par for the four rounds at the Evian. So a fantastic victory, obviously her second major championship, having won the US Women's Open last year. And it certainly guarantees her the Rookie of the Year honours in the LPGA. And it actually follows in the footsteps of the great Sarah Pack, and actually being only the second player alongside Sarah Pack to actually make her first two wins on the LPGA Tour majors. So she's not picking out many of them, but she's picking out quality ones when she does win. And she's a tremendously gifted player. And only 22 years old, which, you know, obviously it's, you know, young by anyone's standards, but in the LPGA, that seems to be the prime of people's careers now, where the young women, that's when they are at their best, when they're 22, 23. So she's right in that prime period now and really could affirm herself as being arguably the strongest Korean player in the world right now. Obviously, NB Park is still there and still fighting strong and still obviously the most decorated player from that part of the world right now. But In Jee Chan is someone who has clearly got the potential to, you know, win as many majors as MB has in the coming years. So a really impressive player. And it was a great week for the Koreans, obviously, with Seo Young-ryu finishing second alongside Sung Joon Kim, who is a quite an interesting player, someone who's kind of come out of left field, really. Only 23 years old, rather. She turned pro 4 years ago, but has been a kind of a late bloomer by, you know, female golfer standards. You know, her first year on the LPGA Tour of Korea was only 2 years ago, and that was a fairly uneventful year. Not much happened that season. And her first LPGA Tour event itself was actually last year, where she produced a real, you know, out-of-nowhere performance to finish second behind Lexi Thompson, someone who has a remarkably fluid swing, a real natural-looking player, hits the ball a country mile, much like Lexi Thompson in many ways. She's almost like the Korean version of Lexi. And she's won titles in Korea this year, and now a runner-up in the Evian. So maybe she's going to be the next Korean player to come through and win a major championship in the coming years. But certainly the Koreans have re-established themselves as being the dominant force, and Inji Chun is going to be, again, leader of the pack going forward. And Shan Shan Fang, who of course is a Chinese player who won a major a few years ago, the first Chinese player to do that, bronze medalist indeed at the Olympic Games recently. She's played well at the Evian in the last 3 years and finished fourth this time round. Someone who, again, is always capable of picking off the big events. And again, in terms of the LPGA and the women's games growth internationally, if Shan Shan Fang could win some more events, major championships, then that would certainly drive interest in China in particular. But obviously the Evian Championship being the last major of the year in the women's game, it was obviously a fairly new event at that level, only 4 years old now as a major, and it feels, again, very much a manufactured event. Evian essentially bought the rights to have a major championship. The golf course isn't exactly a classic. However, it was well attended, and I say that obviously it was a really top scoring at the highest level, but in the end, the major winners of the other majors this year didn't really show up at their best. You know, Lydia Ko finished in the tie for 43rd, and that's a disaster by her incredibly high standards. And Arya Ikanagan as well, who won the British Open this year, she's a four-time winner in the LPGA this season. She finished in tied ninth, which is fine, but well behind the leader. Alongside Brooke Henderson, of course, was so brilliant when she won the women's PGA. And they've all won majors this season, and multiple victories on the Tour de Freedom, Lydia as well. And of course, Ko also won the Annika Award this past week, which is a points title for the player who with the most consistent performance in the majors. And she won the old Dinah Shore event at the start of the year, the first major of the season, so that really put her in a strong position to claim that title as well. But the three of them, they didn't really show up at their as you would expect them to. They all played in the Olympic Games. Maybe there was a busy summer, a lot of events. They've all won this season, all won recently. Maybe there's a bit of fatigue sitting in there going into the last major of the season. That can certainly happen. But those three players, going into next season with the form they've shown this year, will be hard to beat next season. So again, it's looking good there. But there's also, Carl, a really strange story for Nana Madsen, a Danish player, an LET player, and she incurred a four-stroke penalty in the first round, which was quite remarkable. 21-year-old, I say a recent winner in the LET, potential Solheim Cup player next year. She brushed sand on the fringe of the 18th green on the first round, and she thought nothing of it at the time. Even after seeing one of her playing partners, caddy, speaking with rules officials afterwards, she thought nothing of it. And later that evening, she was contacted and informed that she had incurred penalties for improving lie, area of intended stance or swing or line of play. And the next two penalty strokes came from the new rule, wrong score for hole. And before this year, she would have been disqualified for sending an incorrect scorecard, but the rules this year have been softened by the RNA and the USGA. And the next day, she actually confronted the caddy who essentially gave her up, if you like, commented to the officials for her, and he regretted not informing her beforehand, which would have saved her those extra two shots for signing the wrong scorecard. And she ultimately missed the cut, unfortunately. So it was an interesting event. Obviously, the majors this year, both men and women, they've been kind of defined in some ways by rules, debacles, and issues and incidents. And this is another one of them, albeit on a lower scale. But it was an interesting one nonetheless. But in terms of the performances, Carlos, Inji Chun was obviously a record-breaking victory. A player who, I think now with a second major behind her, has the foundation to, now she's on the LPGA Tour full-time, to actually go on and potentially join the likes of Lydia, the likes of Arya, the likes of Brooke, and those players in B Park as being one of the top five or six players in the world, because she certainly has the potential.
Well, she definitely does, and I think that Inji Chun now has to be added to that group of Lydia, Arya, and Brooke, definitely. I think they're going to be the force to be reckoned with. And Inji, to me, all three that are right now on the top are like so different players, because you see Lydia doesn't have that kind of a power off the tee shot, but she doesn't need it. She has everything else. Arya is just overpowering everything, and she doesn't have that good of a short game. Then you take a look at Brooke. Brooke is more of an all-around, but she's inconsistent. now you go to see Inge Chan, and she has everything. I mean, she can drive it. She has such a great stroke, such a great swing, perfect mechanics. I mean, she has a great putting. And most of all, she has this great demeanor. She doesn't seem to get fazed by anything, and she's so concentrated on everything. I think these four, and like you mentioned, I think that definitely Inge Chan will be I know I don't want to say that Inge Park is done because she's far from it, and we just have to wait until next year when she comes back to see what kind of a form she comes back. But we already saw what she can do at the Olympics. I think the LPGA, the women's game, is in great hands. I mean, these four girls, and very young, all of them. The oldest one is right now Inge with 22. So the women's game is at a great, great place right now. And I can't wait to see what Inge Chan can do. She was the player of the year last year in the Korean Tour, and she set all kind of records. And this year, you mentioned Sung-hyun Park, and she was the one that is doing what Inge Chan did. She's breaking all the records on the Korean Tour this year. And will she be the next, like you said? So, and kind of a late bloomer. She had another career before that, but wow, she can play as well. And there's so many great players and such a great depth in the women's game that it's just awesome to watch. And that's why, you know, the LPGA has such a following. Do you have any other comments? We have Fred that has joined us, so let's ask him a little bit about it. But do you have any other comments about the Evian Championship?
No. Let's bring the man himself on.
Let's bring Fred. Fred, hi. How are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Good evening, Fred.
Hey, I just was listening
to
the wrap-up.
We have a task for you later on in the show. Just wanted to brief you on it.
Okay.
Kieran is being sacrilegious there at the Home of Golf. He's fighting a hook right now off the tee. So he will need some tips.
I need your help, Fred.
We'll talk about that.
That'll be great. Hey, on the Evian, as you guys did a great job wrapping that up, doing the wrap up, the recap on it. Just a couple things, and Carlos, you were touching on it, the Sung-hyun Park. She's what, won five times in career or on the Japanese tour or whatever. You know, she's making all kinds of money over there. We talked about it last week that she's making so much money over there, she doesn't maybe need to come to the LPGA tour. And she made comments last week that maybe she doesn't even feel like she's quite ready yet. But, boy, finishing T2 in a major, I'd say she might be ready. One other quick thing I want to put in here, Carlos. Craig Kane, you know, has been a great friend of the show. We count on him. He gives us all the greatest information on the LPGA Tour. I got an email from him yesterday. He's going to be leaving the LPGA. He did not say what he's going to be doing, but he's got an opportunity to do something else, and so he's going to be leaving the LPGA. So we hate to see that, but we sure wish him the best in everything that he's doing.
Oh, most definitely. Craig is such a great person, a great help for us here. Any time that we have asked for his help, he's been on the show, very gracious and great information. So hopefully I want to second that, those sentiments, and wish him the best wherever he goes. Hey, let's talk a little bit about now about the Web.com Tour Finals. They're also just right in the middle of it, and Michael Thompson right now will be returning to the PGA Tour, and that's because he won in Boise, Idaho. The 31-year-old who may be best known for winning the 2013 Honda Classic, he captured the Albertsons Boise Open, which is the second event in the Web.com Tour Finals. He finished 145th. In the FedEx Cup standings this season, but he closed with a bogey 364 there at Hillcrest Country Club to finish at 23 under, three strokes ahead of Miguel Angel Carvalho, who closed with a 66. That victory has moved him to the top of the Web.com Tour Final money list, and that is a very precious and coveted spot since it grants you one of the two fully exempt positions for next year on the PGA Tour, as well as an exemption into the Players' Championship in the upcoming PGA Tour season. Last week's winner, Bryson DeChambeau, he missed a cut Maybe he was suffering, maybe a lowdown in energy after putting all that effort in securing his card last week via his playoff win. But, hey, there's still two more tournaments to go, so he still has a chance to maybe earn that fully exempt card. Also securing something was the PGA Tour. They secured the Beef. You know, that is in the form of England's Andrew Beef Johnson, or Beef, depending on who's saying it, but who in a short time has become golf's most beloved cult hero, and he's now a member of the PGA Tour after finishing in solo fourth. You might remember that he made waves by saying that he was going to get hammered after winning the Spanish Open, holding up Sergio Garcia there earlier this year. And he's currently $20,000 ahead of last year's 25th place finisher, which means his card is secure. Beef joked that he was going to drink a few sodas after his top five in Boise. Then he clarified and said, there are going to be a few beers, man. So Johnson will be playing both the PGA Tour and the European Tour next season, which can be difficult balancing act. He does seem to love the competition, though, so that helps, you know. But and he plays as much as or more than anybody else in the world right now. Kieran, it will be a great thing for both tours too. Can't help but like having more Beef stateside as he continues playing homage to the European Tour, which made him into what he is today. And you can bet there will be plenty of time for celebrating, no matter where Beef will finish.
Well, absolutely. He's going to absolutely love this achievement to get his PGA Tour card. And it really continues what's been a kind of meteoric, remarkable rise in the game. Only 2 years ago, he was on the Challenge Tour, and he won that tour in 2014. And he's come through there and slowly progressed as a player over the past 18 months or so. Obviously, getting that first win earlier this year. And that really, as you say, Carlos, put him on the map in terms of, you know, his character and his demeanor. People on the tour often knew it before, what kind of a really big character that he is. And now people obviously across the world have seen that for themselves, and he's everywhere. You can't escape him. You know, he's probably on more media channels than the world number one is. I think by far. I saw just today, Beef is on the front cover of Golf Digest, which is remarkable given Golf Digest usually put on scantily clad women on the front cover these days. So Beef is at least a step up from that, I would say.
That's quite a change, yeah.
That's quite a change, yeah.
Paulina Gretzky, Andrew Johnson. That's Lexi Thompson in a bikini, Andrew Johnson. Yeah, that's a lot of difference, yeah.
Well, I'm very much in the Andrew Johnson camp in that regard. But, yeah, so yeah, I guess he's really a golfer, obviously, so that's one thing he's got. But he's got his clothes on, which is also very important, so I give him that. But he's quite a character. Earlier this year in July, I at the Scottish Open, I followed a group. It was Andrew Beef Johnston playing with Padraig Harrington and Colin Montgomery. And I thought those three characters playing together in a group was the makings of a TV sitcom. It was so good. I followed these guys for about nine holes, just watching them, watching their interaction, watching the various personalities come together, and it was tremendously entertaining. So Beef is quite a character. He's the past few months have been obviously crazy for him, contending at the Open Championship, of course, distantly contending at the Open Championship. He's been the guy's living the dream, and I think in the end that's what people like about him is he has got that everyman quality. He's not one of the kind of middle class college boys who have had everything given to them really and have sort of worked with that, and they're not like regular people. But Beef has that kind of everyman quality about him. He's very open, he's very friendly, he's just who he is. He's perfectly comfortable in his own skin, a little bit like Miguel Angel Jimenez, where he just, you may think he looks ridiculous, but he's happy with who he is, and that's a very appealing trait to have. And Andrew has that, and that's why people really like him. And he gives back, he enjoys interacting with the fans, he's very good with people, he signs all the autographs, takes the pictures, he smiles at them. And let's be honest, that's not a regular trait with so many players on the tour these days, unfortunately, with the game being so money-orientated and so many of the players now make it look like a chore that they're out there. But in the end, Andrew Johnston is someone who seems to almost think that he's living the dream because, in the end, only 2 years ago he was, essentially, maybe having to look for another career. So he has that perspective that so many of the top players don't have, and I think that makes him appealing. And I'd hope he has great success on the PGA Tour and the European Tour next year. Balancing both tours, as you say, Carlos, it's not always the easiest thing to do, but he's such an easygoing character, maybe he can pull it off. But certainly, who knows how long he'll be at the top or playing well or being on the airwaves, but as long as we have him, Beef's a great character, and for now, he's here to stay.
He's here to stay, and one thing is, like you mentioned, he's getting such great and big attention. I mean, the galleries there, and boys who are following him. The first appearance was with Bryson DeChambeau, and Bryson is another guy that has been followed a lot, and that was everybody just following them. And he also has the game, Fred, to go along with that personality, which is what makes him so appealing to the people. And like you mentioned, Kieran as well, he's just an average guy, and that's what appeals to, that's what makes him a cult hero like it is right now for him. He's the one that got all the attention, and the fact that Michael Thompson was the winner and nobody's talking about him, they were saying that, hey, Beef secured the PGA Tour championship, the PGA Tour card. Yeah, but hey, Michael Thompson won. So Fred, some thoughts there on the Web.com Tour and Beef securing the PGA Tour card.
Yeah, just a couple things real quick. Like you say, that's the big story. Beef outshines everything for sure. And, you know, we talked about a couple weeks ago when we did the preview for the Web.com Tour Finals. We said, you know, Andrew Johnson and we said Bryson DeChambeau are a couple guys that, you know, probably were the class of that final group that probably would make it through. And by golly, they've done it already second weekend. Also, this is the third leg this week coming up, and they're back at my home, Kieran, OSU Scarlet. That's, you know, I know you got St. Andrews, I know you got Kings Barnes, I know you got Carnoustie there in your backyard, but OSU Scarlet, man, that's pretty good stuff.
You'll have them there. You can go and see them right there. You can see the Beef. You can go see the Beef right up close. Hey, Kieran, there was action in the European Tour, the Italian Open, and Francesco Molinari won for a record second time, holding off Danny Willett, who made everything that he could. But tell us all about how he fell short to Francesco's record-setting win.
Well, yeah, Carlos, it was a really entertaining event. The two of them the last day really went head-to-head and toe-to-toe and went back and forth, and Francesco obviously came into the event really desperate to win the title for a second time, having done so a decade ago. And a guy who, you know, maybe could feel slightly one of the outside potential Ryder Cup players this year, obviously missed out on a pick, but certainly the guy who is tremendously consistent. He doesn't really do much in terms of grabbing headlines. You know, he's one of those characters who is a little bit unassuming, but he actually has a really good sense of humor. He's one of the most likable guys on the tour, but he doesn't win very often. I think that's what holds him back. You know, I was surprised. I know he's had some issues with his putting through the years, and he's not always been the most clinical putter on the greens, but to win only four European Tour events now, for a player of his quality from tee to green, is quite something. But he's such a quality golfer, and he putted great at the Italian Open, and maybe he was inspired by the home fans, maybe that was what it was, and the crowds there were just incredible. It was just, you know, 10 deep. It was really, really promising for the tour to see something like that. And it actually follows very similar to what we had last week at the Dutch Open, the KLM, where Joost Luiten won there in front of massive crowds again. So when these home players, when they perform well and when they have a chance to win, it brings out the crowds, and it really makes for a great spectacle. And the Italian Open was a great spectacle because you had Danny Willett, the Masters champion, back to form, and he's really overcome what's been a really poor June and July. He didn't have a great summer. After finishing third at the Wentworth, he didn't really do anything at all, really, until now. And again, that can happen, obviously, when you're settling in as a new major champion, that whole process. And again, he's had a baby, of course, before the Masters, so it was a really meteoric, crazy, you know, few weeks for Danny back in April. And he's probably had a period of adjusting, trying to settle down in what's a new life, not just on the golf course or in the media, but also at home. So, but he's finally getting some form back, and that will certainly please Darren Clarke going into the Ryder Cup. And the thing is, you know, Danny, this is really testing how quality the two of them played and how good Francesco was, and that Danny Willett, over 72 holes, had one bogey the entire week, and that was in the first round. He played the last three rounds bogey-free, which is extraordinary, and he still came up short to Francesco. obviously made that great par in the last to force Francesco to make par, having come out of the trees, had a great, you know, recovery from the trees to get on the green, and he two putted from there to get the win, and obviously it meant so much to him. So it was a really good event, and for the Ryder Cup guys as well, a few of them were there, and Darren Clarke obviously would have been watching them closely. Your Rafa Cabrera Bell, he finished in a tie for 12th, which obviously continues what's been a really consistent couple of years for him. He's seems to always be in the top 15, top 20, and he's racking up those points. That's why he made the team so comfortable in the end. Matt Fitzpatrick finished in a tie for 15th, while Martin Kaymer, Andy Sullivan, and Chris Wood all finished together in a tie for 20th. You know, those guys, you can't separate them. So maybe they're going to be teammates at the Ryder Cup, you never know, or partners. But Lee Westwood was kind of the odd man out, as he missed the cut by one shot. So obviously that's, you know, is it a cause for concern? I don't really think so in the end. You know, he finished very strongly in Switzerland a few weeks ago at the Omega European Masters. So, you know, Lee's working this week with Phil Kenyon, actually, the putting coach of Rory McIlroy, a new putting guru. And maybe Lee's trying to get his stroke in order and his mind ready for the Ryder Cup, where he's obviously going to be one of the experienced heads. It's going to be a very, you know, comparatively youthful team. A lot of rookies on there. And Martin Kaymer and Thomas Peters are actually both playing this week in Europe on the European Open in Germany. So those two guys are playing. They're then jetting out to Hazeltine for the start of next week, obviously for joining their teammates over there. But Francesco, a guy who, again, he has tremendous quality, won that WGC obviously 6 years ago now. You know, he's still a relative young guy. He's got the quality to potentially be in the Ryder Cup teams going forward. You know, from tee to green, there aren't many better players than him. And when he putts well, he's a very hard man to beat, Carlos.
Oh, definitely. And Danny Willett, like you mentioned, Danny had the baby, and I think that adjustment has gotten him a little bit off, and it showed also during the Olympics that he was still like trying to get back his game to the point where he was when he won the Masters, and he's leading the Race to Dubai right now, and that's his main focus has been to win and hold off Henrik and Rory McIlroy, who's really getting back in form, so we can see a lot of Danny Willett. And good news, like you said, for Darren Clarke, that Danny Willett, he needs Danny Willett to be in his top for Europe to maintain and retain the cup. So, Fred, any comments on the European Tour?
No, just the fact, like you guys mentioned, that some of the Ryder Cup guys had pretty good weeks, and so that bodes well for them. Kaymer, Fitzpatrick, and then getting Danny Willett to play good. So, yeah, that's Cabrera-Bale. Yeah, that's very good for their Ryder Cup chances, yep.
Hey, remaining tournaments on the major tours, let's talk a little bit quickly about the Symetra Tour there. Christine Song, she won the Symetra Tour's Garden City Charity Classic at Buffalo Dunes on Saturday. She's a 25-year-old Californian. She closed with a 69 at Buffalo Dunes Golf Course to finish at 13 under, two strokes ahead of Wisanee Michai, who made a run with a closing 67. Canada's Jessica Wallace was third at 10 under after a 70. Song earned $15,000 to jump from 103rd to 37th on the money list to a 20,524 in four events. The top 10 after the final three events will earn LPGA Tour cards. Song has already made 61 LPGA Tour starts, 16 this season, and this victory was her fifth on the Symetra Tour. And to close up, you know, the shadows were long, the shadows of legends longer, when 51-year-old Englishman Paul Broadhurst stood over that 4-foot birdie putt to win on the 18th green at Pebble Beach Golf Links on Sunday. 2 months ago, Broadhurst won the Senior British Open at Carnoustie, and you know, only two men previously had won at both venues, Ben Hogan and Tom Watson. And no, it wasn't a PGA Tour victory for him at each venue, but to grab the victory at Pebble, Broadhurst did have to withstand a furious rally by another legend, the Senior Tour's most dominant player the last decade, Bernhard Langer, who shot a 6-under par 66 in his bid to win for the fifth time in 2016. And that is how it went down, with a birdie on Pebble Beach famed par 5 18 hole. Broadhurst won the PGA Tour Champions Nature Valley First Tee Open, his second win in only six PGA Tour Champions starts this year. He closed definitely, holding off there Langer by one and Kevin Sutherland. And there was also a pro junior competition there, juniors that were 81 juniors that competed alongside the pros, thanks to the first tee. And that pro junior competition was won by Michael Allen and Patrick Fernandez from the 18 and unders. And Kieran, I got to turn this to you. It's incredible that Broadhurst saw and played Pebble Beach for the first time on Wednesday.
Yeah, and that's an amazing stat about obviously joining Hogan and Watson as winning on those two iconic venues, you know, Pebble and Carnoustie. And it was a real big thing for him to win that event at Carnoustie 2 months ago, the Senior Open. Really, it was in so many ways a life changer. You know, Paul is somebody who obviously a very good player on the European Tour in his day, played the Ryder Cup in 91, someone who had a high quality, won a number of times in Europe. But when he turned 50, he had a very kind of lean spell in his late 40s, turned 50, the European Senior Tour really it's not really a proper functioning circuit. You know, there's so few events on it now, and none of them really have a great deal of money on them. So it's hard to make a living on that circuit. And he was looking at various different things to try and alternative ways to earn a living. So to win the Senior Open Championship, which he did, obviously opened the door to join the Champions Tour in America, which obviously is, you know, brilliantly lucrative. There's events most weeks. You know, there's big money there comparatively. And obviously it's a hard tour they got on in the first place. It's very hard to stay there. And that's now easier than how he's actually won an event on the regular Champions Tour now, of course, as well. So to get those two wins this kind of mid to late summer that he's done have been really impressive. And it's set him up for, you know, what could be a really profitable couple of years in America. And, it was a real career changer, the win at Carnoustie. And now he's, you know, he's taken it to another level by actually winning in the Champions Tour. And don't be surprised to see him continue that the rest of the year and into next year, because he's a very high-quality player to this day. And now he's got the confidence behind him now that he's either a senior major champion, and he's beaten guys like Bernard Langer to win an event on the Champions Tour at a high-quality, you know, classic venue like Pebble Beach. Then, you know, he's someone who can certainly go on a step to strength from here. And he's one of the nice guys on the European scene as well, so it's good to see him do well.
Fred, any comments on the Champions Tour or the Signature Tour?
Yeah, you saw who was in second place there, right?
Bernhard Langer.
He just keeps on. I do have just a mini rant, okay? I watched just a little bit of this, and, you know, I'm big on, you know, we're barely big here on the Evans Scholars Program and you know, on the first tee and all that, and they really do a good job there with this Nature Valley tournament. And so Dave Marr does a walking interview with John Daly and his playing companion, the young man from the first tee. And John, as they bring the camera onto him, he turns his head away, gets his cigarettes out, lights up a cigarette while they're. I'm thinking, what is this guy doing? I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get the attraction. More power to him. You know, keep on playing, John. But boy, that was not very cool what he did there. So that's all I got to say, Carl. It's a little bit of a mini rant.
I have to
quickly say there, Carl. I think John Daly, in his defense, may have been slightly shocked at being interviewed by Dave Marr, considering Dave Marr has been dead for 20 years, but there we go.
Well, I meant, yeah, you know who I mean.
I'm only joking, Fred.
he needed a smoke. Oh, man, I'm seeing that.
Yeah, that got his attention. old age, strikes again.
Well, you see, that's what we get here on live radio. So, hey, with that, we'll wrap up our weekend backspin. Let's take our first short break. When we come back, we've got the firefighters, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, and we're going to start with some news about some golf retailers that are closing doors, and Kieran, you have all the details about that.
Yes, Carlos, thank you, and obviously it's been a recurring theme in the last few weeks with the golf industry being in the headlines, obviously after obviously Nike and all the rest of it, so it's been not the most positive few weeks for golf industry in the business papers, if you like, but obviously this latest news will only continue that seemingly downward trend. And Golfsmith, which is recognized as being the largest specialty golf retailer in the world, actually initiated Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings recently. And the company, which is based in Austin in Texas, operates 109 stores across the United States under the Golfsmith name and 55 stores in Canada under the Golf Town banner. And Golf Town has been sold off to Fairfax Financial and CI Investments, which intends to keep open an undisclosed number of profitable Golf Town locations. So with the threat of bankruptcy looming, Golfsmith had actually been searching for a buyer for much of the summer. The company had listed debts and assets of as much as $500 million each in a Delaware court and will now have to restructure under the protection of Chapter 11, and which will see underperforming Golfsmith stores close, and those assets will be ultimately liquidated. And the question with this would be, is this a sign that the golf industry, in terms of club sales and close and that sort of thing, is declining? Is a sign that the golf itself is dying or disappearing or anything like that? Participation levels are down or whatever? Or is it actually a wider question as to the way that the retail sector is as a whole, not just golf, but every other industry? The old-fashioned way of shopping and going out and to the store and buying stuff, that a lot of people don't do that anymore. It's all online now. It's all different other ways of doing things. And we're seeing the regular stores and streets all across, not just in America, but across Britain, Europe, the old way of shopping and buying stuff, it doesn't really exist anymore. It's a little bit like people buying CDs. They don't do it anymore. Or buying DVDs. No, they don't do that either. They download things now. So it's the people are changing their practices in terms of how they buy things, and I think that's also affecting golf and those stores. And Jeff Shackelford actually wrote a blog on his site, which is critical of the coverage from leading business publications, including Bloomberg, which seemed to be making the whole story out to be a sign that golf itself was declining and that was what's causing these closures, rather than those changing retail habits across the board and individual businesses themselves actually failing as companies, which I think is part of it too. It's obviously a really complicated situation, but I think it's very true to say, and again, as I said a minute ago, it's not just golf, but retail habits are changing, people are buying things differently, and that is going to affect the stores on the street. Will those stores still be required in the coming years? Many of them probably will not be, because of the way people now consume their products, and it's changed. And unfortunately, that's just the reality of the way things are. And the golf industry and every other industry, which has a lot of store-based selling, that's how they run their businesses, that will have to recalibrate itself in the coming years, because, as I say, the habits are changing from consumers, and it's having an impact. And also, we saw the King Power Golf Superstore in Michigan close its doors this month, actually only 5 days ago, after a long and popular presence in the community. And it had grown decades ago from being just a putt-putt course to a wholesale retailer, which actually employed 230 people at its peak. But that business model has been in decline, and in the face of declining returns, the decision was made to close that shop. And again, that comes back to what I said a minute ago, retail habits are changing, Carlos, and in the end, the golf industry, like so many others, are having to change how they present their products and how they sell their products, because people are buying things differently, and that's having a big impact on businesses, and unfortunately, it's having a big impact on jobs.
Hey, Fred, what's your take on this? Do you think this is a reflection of the golf industry as a whole, or it's just an individual thing?
Well, no, it's a reflection of the industry. I mean, I've been with several golf industry people over the last couple weeks, and this topic comes up every time. And the consensus is that it falls back to TaylorMade just killing the market, with coming out with new products every 3 or 4 months. And guys got smart, and they just said, I don't need to pay $500 for that. I'll just wait. Buy it in 6 months off of, either marked down in the shop to 50% off, or I'll buy it on eBay. And so it just changed the whole market structure on clubs. And then you've got a little bit of a declining playing base. So you've got people that – just not as enough people needing clubs. So the technology is not changing that much to get something. So it's just, you know, it's a way we're buying. It's a way we're buying in the United States or across the world, really. And it's just not a change in technology to force guys to go buy the new stuff. And then the past history has been that the new technology maybe didn't do what they were saying. And if you just wait a little bit, you can buy it a lot cheaper because they're going to discount it. So that's the whole thing of it. But it is unfortunate. Saginaw, I go through there all the time. They were a big employer in that community, and that was a big place. And their brands that they had, you know, Olimar and Knight and a couple of the others, they were big brands at one time. They moved a lot of product. They were, I think, the largest wholesaler in the country in golf at one time. So, you know, it's a big deal for the whole thing.
Okay, moving on. Let me tell you one thing about Mike Kaiser. He knows about long lines. Having built one of the world's finest golf resorts, Vendor Dunes, in a remote town in Ireland. 2 years ago, the Chicago Green Card Magnati told NBC Golf Channel commentator Mark Wolfing that Wolfing's dream project, combining the Jackson Park and South Shore golf courses to create Southside Mecca near the site of the planned Obama Library, had a 1 in a 100 chance to succeed. Now, Kaiser predicts, it's 2-3. Wow, what a change. And if that isn't enough, Kaiser said he believes Tiger Woods is on board to be the course architect. And he goes even further. He goes that he might be willing to waive his design fee. Wow, given that the course would benefit the first tee of Greater Chicago. That would be awesome if he does, but anyway. Rolfing cautioned that Woods' hiring is not a done deal, but he did tell the Tribune that the 14-time major winner, he did visit Chicago in the last month to tour the property. An announcement could come later this month at the Ryder Cup outside Minneapolis. You know, Woods is going to be an assistant captain for the U.S. team. Well, we're going to be talking a little bit about that later on. But Woods spokesman Glenn Greenspan, he said via email, and I quote, "At this time, we have no new design projects to announce," end of quote. You know, Woods is fairly new to the design business. I mean, he's run out fewer than half a dozen courses so far. But his projects, especially in Cabo San Lucas in Mexico, has been well received, and he is, as you know, Tiger Woods. So anything can happen, and we'll have this on 24/7 watching our Raiders, just as this other piece of news that whether it is true or not is another one we'll just have to wait and see. Some might see it as crazy, others might say, hey, it just makes perfect sense. But, you know, the shuttering of Nike Golf's hard goods has created a lot of opportunities for their competitors in the space. But it's safe to say, no one saw this one coming. And rumors have surfaced. Rumors have surfaced. And they've come apparently from legitimate sources that TaylorMade may have a potential buyer, and his name is Tiger Woods. Could you imagine that? I mean, I'm talking about a tweet last week from Rick Young, who is an equipment and business analyst for Score Golf and is a past president of the Golf Journalists Association of Canada, which read, and I quote, "Sitting down, sources tell me Tiger Woods is in serious negotiation to purchase TaylorMade Golf from Adidas AG." And there's also another tweet, but this one was from Golf Australia's editor, Brendan James, which reads, and I quote, "Best golf rumor ever. Tiger Woods will not only play TaylorMade Golf Clubs in 2017, he's negotiating to buy the company." Wow. You know, TaylorMade, as you might recall, and Fred was mentioning right now, has been shopped around in recent months by their owners, Adidas Group, along with the other golf brands, Adams and Ashworth. Young and James, we have to say, well, they're both respected journalists with solid industry connections. So you might have to take their reports seriously, right? This rumor also brings the added angle of Jason Day's new mega deal with Nike Golf. I'm going to report a little bit about that, and he's re-upping with TaylorMade for equipment. But to me, if the cat has the dough, you know, hey, go for it. Tiger could not only be compensated for playing tailor-made equipment, but he could pull off the rare deal and enjoy the indie equity upside generated from his sponsorship. You know, even though Tiger likes to keep information tightly close, rumors are just that until confirmed, and nothing has come forward after that. Think about it. Didn't source have Tiger Woods signing with Muria like 3 weeks ago? You have to think that either Tiger has more cash than we think, or TaylorMade is worth less than what you're thinking. Or unless he's just a frontman for other investors, that might be possible. So, you know, Tiger announced his return to golf. Then Matt Kuchar joked about him being possibly the last captain's pick for the USA team. And now this, I mean, Kieran, he's dominating the news lately without stepping into the golf course. This may be good news or bad news for golf, depending on who you ask. But it just proves the big cat remains the big topic in golf, and no Rory, Jordan, Jason, or Dustin combined can amount to half of the pro drawing power that he has here.
Well, that's right, and it's funny that we're actually talking about Tiger's almost his on-course activities, his potential business activities, and that's, you know, if Tiger's golf doesn't ever get back to any reasonable level, I think Tiger will, in some ways, like Arnold Palmer, but only even more so, will become such a significant figure business-wise within golf and elsewhere in the coming decades. Because Tiger's a very intelligent guy, you know, he's a very proactive guy, he wants to be involved in things, and I think in the coming years he's going to get involved in the game at some level. If he can't be a top player, I think he'll get involved in it business-wise, and that's going to be obviously with his foundation as well and stuff like that. So Tiger will be, you know, making the headlines for many, many years to come, both on the course and, in this case, off it. But one guy who's made some headlines, Carlos, recently, obviously moving on to the third part of our Par 5 news, and that will be on Keith Pelley, who is the European Tour's chief executive. And he's been there now for, well, about 18 months in that new role, and replacing George O'Grady. Obviously came in with a big sort of bluster about how he's going to change everything. He's going to be innovative and creative and look at new, fresh ideas and how to change the European Tour and improve its purses, improve its stature, and really bring the top players back and then drive up viewerships across the world and drive up interest and fan, you know, stuff like that. And his new idea, which he has touched on earlier this year and mentioned being a possibility, it's now going to be a reality, is he's going to launch the World Super 6 Perf, which is to be co-sanctioned by the European Tour and the PGA Tour of Australasia, which will replace the Perf International, which is a regular event, a very good event itself on the tours in recent years. And it will replace Perf International, and this new tournament will actually feature 54 holes of stroke play, as you would normally see, only now it will be followed by a cut to the low 24 players, who will then compete in a series of six-hole matches on the final day. But, this is a great twist, if any of these matches are tied after six holes, they will use, whatever this may be, they're calling it a knockout hole to determine a winner. And this will be a 100-yard hole that will comprise of a tee adjacent to the 18th fairway of Lake Karanyup and the existing 18th green. So they'll go back and forth here. And if a match remains tied after the competitors have actually played this knockout hole once, they will return to the tee for a closest to the pin contest to decide the victor. And does it make any sense to you? I don't know. Anyway, it follows the likes of cricket and rugby and netball and having a shortened, kind of unique format. Rugby sevens, which is a game involving only seven players rather than the conventional 15 in rugby. That was actually an Olympic Games for the first time this year. Fiji won that quite memorably. While 2020 cricket, as it's called, has proven to be extremely popular in Asia, particularly in places like India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, where they have a big cricket following, and indeed in the United Kingdom. So golf, the European Tour is going to try this next year in Australia. I think it's been received this kind of muted and somewhat dismissive response from people. People have been slightly confused by the format, don't quite understand what it's all about. I think it seems a bit gimmickish and a bit contrived. But is it any more stupid than the FedEx Cup? Probably not. So let's wait and see what happens.
Kieran loves the FedEx Cup.
I was waiting for it, and I thought he would wait until the segment of the FedEx stop to trash it, but
he couldn't.
I had to get it out, Carlos. I've been keeping it in for the past 45 minutes. I had to let it out. Feel better now.
Hey, Fred, before I close up with my news on Jason Day, anything you want to add about the Tiger Woods and about this Keith Pelley subject?
No, you guys really you guys covered it really well. You know, I've been looking for Tiger. I think Tiger's been looking for the right venue for him to get into, more into the golf business. You know, Nike's been paying him a nice chunk of change, but now that's going to go away. So I'm sure he's been looking at what he's going to do after his playing days are over for sure. I know he's been going stir crazy there in Florida or wherever he's been, not being able to play. And so he's going to have something to keep his mind busy, something to keep him doing stuff. And, you know, I see him competing now off the golf course against the Jack Nicklaus's, the Arnold Palmer, the Greg Norman. I look for Tiger to want to compete and beat those guys, you know, in the corporate world now that, you know, maybe his playing days are winding down. And this may be a way to do it. This may be an entry level for him to do that.
You know, I was joking about 3 weeks ago when the Myuria rumors that they were going to sign Tiger Woods. I was joking with some friends about the fact that, hey, maybe Tiger should buy TaylorMade. You know, and that would be...
He heard you. He probably heard you.
And he probably heard me. And I'm not kidding. I tell you, I was just... When this came up, I was like, whoa, it happened. But no, it's just rumors so far. But, hey, it would make sense, really. Like you mentioned, he's at a point in his career where he also... He might not be over. We don't know. 27 days remain until he returns officially to golf. But hey, he needs to start looking forward, and he's a businessman anyway, so he has to be looking to secure his income somehow anyway, one way or another, whether his career continues or not. He has to look forward to that. And talking about TaylorMade, well, let's talk about Jason Day, who Nike's no stranger to signing the top golfer in the world, and now they're back at it again. And Fred, you mentioned this last week on our final thoughts, but let's expand a little bit more on it. He's the number one golfer in the world and winner of 8 PGA Tour events since the beginning of 2015. He signed with Nike to wear its shoes and apparel. Terms of the deal were not disclosed, but the 28-year-old from Blizzard, Australia, is estimated to make more than $10 million per year with that. The announcement comes on the heels of Nike's recent move to leave the golf business. Day's contract with TaylorMade Adidas is just up at the end of the year, but he resigned in order to continue using TaylorMade equipment. Nike agreed to shutter its golf equipment business after it finished the 2016 fiscal year with just $706 million in revenue. It's worst year since 2011. However, its golf clothing and apparel business has been successful with models such as Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy to push the brand forward. A Nike endorser hasn't won a major in the past 8 opportunities. That might not be a good thing for him, but that's a streak that a player of Day's stature could easily break. He finished second at this summer's PGA Championship, tied for 8th at the U.S. Open, and tied for 10th at the Masters. And related to this story, there was a story published on the Back Nine Report blog submitted by Ed Travis, who is a national award-winning golf journalist, who congratulated Jason Day for not making the same mistake numerous other stars have made. He refers to the fact that many top players have their breakthrough wins, start getting offered loads of money by club brands to play with their new clubs, but they never perform like the old ones. Travis mentions the examples of the great late Payne Stewart, who after he won his first major, he took the cash and sued equipment companies, but he was never satisfied with the new company. And he also talks about Rory McIlroy, who after his outstanding 2012 season, he switched to Nike, and then he had one of the worst seasons ever in the next year until he got the new club dialed in. So they, according to Travis, he has not fell into that trap. And like I just mentioned before, he re-upped with his glove company, TaylorMade, several months ago in advance of the contract renewal date at the end of the year. But what he didn't continue was his contract with TaylorMade's parent company, Adidas, to wear their shoes and apparel. So, Kieran, citing Travis' closing statement, congratulations to Jason Day. He gets to have his cake and eat it too for not making a potential disastrous choice, leaving the clubs that made him number one. Wise words, Ed.
Yeah, well, absolutely, Carlos. That's definitely right. But let's say I'm too busy right now, preoccupied and thinking about the FedEx Cup to really consider anything else that you've just said.
Fred, any final words on this before we move to the practice match?
No, Carlos. Jason Day. It's a smart deal. You know, he's going to keep his clubs TaylorMade, and he's picking up $10 million a year from Nike. And it's a good move for him. Absolutely.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up our Part 5 news. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have a practice range where we'll bring you a wall-to-wall preview of the FedEx Cup Player Finale, the Tour Championship, and you'll know the different scenarios, storylines, and much more. And also, we'll talk a little bit about the Ryder Cup. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each of us take a shot at it, but we're going to have a threesome today because we have Kieran with us, and we have two topics.
Okay.
It didn't sound good, but anyway. That's the thing about live radio.
We can see what we want, can't we? It's late at night, so it's,
the great thing is that, you know, you're in Scotland, Fred is in Toledo, and I am here in Dallas, Texas, so. Let me just clear that out for our listeners. That's the kind of threesome we're having. So, long distance.
Okay.
But anyway, let me stop.
Carlos, I'm very disappointed. In the 3 years I've done this show, I didn't realize it was that kind of show.
It'd have been a whole new different thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You would have been more.
I'm completely oblivious to the fact that the show was really that. Was really about. So there we go.
Hey, let's start with the Tour Championship wall to wall preview. Let me tell you a little bit. You know, the PGA Tour season, wraparound season, comes to an end this weekend as the top 30 players in the FedEx Cup standings make their last stop competing in the Tour Championship, the finale to the FedEx Cup at East Lake in Atlanta, starting on Thursday. There's a lot on the line at the season-ending Tour Championship where 30 players will battle it out, not just for this prestigious title, but for a $10 million FedEx Cup bonus, too. For each of the 30, they are rich rewards simply for making it this far, such as Masters invites and so on, and the importance of the end result here at East Lake will vary significantly from man to man. We'll talk a little bit in depth a little bit later on this, but, you know, take Bubba Watson, for example. Yes, he'd love to win the FedEx Cup, and it's remotely possible he could do so, even from 24th in the standings, but make no mistake, his goal this week is to do enough to earn the wild card pick from the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, Davis Love III. There are others in similar position like him. Justin Thomas is 12th. Ryan Moore is 14th, Daniel Berger is 26th, and those are among those who could deny Watson a place in Hazeltine if doing enough to impress Love and the committee, of course. And it should be easy enough for each of them to make that the focus of their attentions rather than the eye-watering sums of money up for grabs. Also comes to mind what is expected to happen this year. The new axis of power of Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy was expected to sweep all before it back in January, And it says much about the expectation levels that despite having combined for 7 titles worldwide, the lack of a major for any one of them can be labeled disappointing. Day is also engaged in the battle for the Player of the Year with Dustin Johnson's 2016 breakout star, who now looks every inch the golfer he was always meant to be and was a class apart the last time out, the 3rd success of a golden summer, much like it happened to Jason Day last year. You know, in the FedEx Cup scenarios, you might need like a degree in quantum physics to understand each and every one of the different scenarios for each to win, but it's simple math for the top 5. If they win the Tour Championship, they win the FedEx Cup. There's also some other scenarios where if they don't win, how they could still win it, and it goes trickling down or up, down to the number 30. Everyone can win it, but of course they would need help the farther down they go. Fred, I'm going to go first to you. Let me tell you that the Donald Ross Design East Lake, now permanent home of the Tour Championship, is a place where the roll of honor alone tells you that accuracy in chart game will usually trump power. Winners include Brent Snedeker, Gene Furyk, and Jordan Spieth. And while Henrik Stenson, Billy Horschel, and Bill Haas are by no means short hitters, it's their accuracy of the tee relative to the power at their disposal which really stands out. What's your take on the cup finale, and who do you think will win?
Well, you know, I'm kind of a little bit like Kieran here. I mean, the FedEx Cup for me, for some reason this year, has just kind of been like, boom. I can't get excited about it. I mean, it's been good golf and all that kind of stuff. I think the season was just so messed up with the Olympics and the compression of the majors, and it's just like, all of a sudden, boom, it's over, and here we are at the FedEx Cup the last week. And, you know, you look at the top guys here, Dustin, Jason Day, Paul Casey's having a great year, Adam Scott, Jimmy Walker, the top 5, you know, that's good stuff. Jordan Spieth, not that far away. Rory, you know, but I look down at the bottom, and you got Sean O'Hare in there. You got Johnny Vegas. You got Siwoo Kim is in there at in 20th something. So, you know, this is the main names. If you go down the list, I mean, these are guys that you've heard about. They've played well all year, of course, and they build up the points so they get to be here. But, Kieran, I'm going to throw this out just for you. We had a discussion this week with some guys that I was with, and it was thrown out that for the Tour Championship, Thursday and Friday should be a qualifier. They take 32 guys rather than 30 into the Tour Championship, and so they play a 2-round qualifier. Then the low 8 go to Saturday morning. You play a quarterfinal match play. You line them up, and then the top 4, you have a final 4 then for Saturday afternoon match play. And then you end up with your two guys for the finals for Sunday, and you either have an 18 or 36 hole match play final on Sunday, man on man for the $10 million. You know, that would be some good TV, I think. I don't know. I think somebody said that was the old Western Open format or Western format, and I kind of like that. I kind of like the sound of that, actually, when they threw that out. So I know that's not on line with what you're talking about, Carlos. I think Dustin Johnson is going to win the $10 million. I think he'd have to break his leg not to. If he just has a decent week, I think he's going to wrap it up.
What's your take, Kieran, on what Fred said, and how about the FedEx Cup final, and who you think is going to win it?
Well, firstly, I like Fred's idea very much, because in the end, the FedEx Cup playoffs, if they want to be genuine playoffs like the NFL or any other sport that has a playoff system, then you could have match play into it. That would make it separate, make it distinct from what you see elsewhere in the year. Every week we see 72-hole stroke play, so the FedEx Cup events aren't really distinct in any way, apart from the fact you have this convoluted point system, where I think the only person who literally understands it is actually Bryson DeChambeau. I think he's the only person qualified to understand the FedEx Cup. But, But generally speaking, you know, the idea of having match play is intriguing. But in the end, stroke play itself only gets really interesting when it becomes a match play situation, like we had at the Open Championship this year with Stenson and Phil, like we had at the Olympic Games with Justin and Stenson again. So when you have those situations where two guys go head to head, you're trading blows, that's when golf becomes interesting to watch. And if you had that, obviously with the bigger stakes of $10 million, you know, the title of FedEx Cup champion, does it mean anything? Well, not probably not yet. Cause you get a regular golfer in a regular golf club and ask them who won the FedEx Cup 4 years ago, and 99.5% of them will have no idea. They'll guess. You know, but they'll know who won the Masters. They'll know who won the Open Championship or the U.S. Open. They might not know who won the PGA Championship, but that's a different thing altogether. But they'll know the majors because they actually matter. The title matters. The FedEx Cup is just, I've said it before, it's just a cash grab for rich guys getting richer. But on the upside, however, what it does do is it gives us four events with fantastic fields, and that's to be welcomed because the events themselves individually have been very entertaining, very good. We've seen Rory get back to form, of course. Dustin Johnson continuing his great year. So the events themselves have been very fun to watch. But the overall system, the overall thing, I don't think it resonates with really anybody on any meaningful level. So I like Fred's idea. I think that would take it to another level. I think that would make it more intriguing. Obviously, when you have 32 guys, 32 top guys on the points list, you're having, you know, the creme de la creme, really, of the PGA Tour, generally speaking, who will make it, the guys who have played consistently the best over the season, plus a few wildcard guys that snuck in at the end. And if you break that down to a bottom eight in the top eight guys, you're probably going to get your Dustin Johnsons, your Jason Days, those kind of players there. And then watching those guys go head-to-head will be interesting. In the end, the Tour Championship this week will only be interesting if you have Dustin Johnson going head-to-head with Jason Day or Rory McIlroy for the title. That's the only way it's going to be interesting. So I like Fred's idea. As for who's going to win it, obviously, it's hard to say. The top five guys can all win. They're all capable. If they win, it doesn't matter what Dustin Johnson does. You know, if Paul Casey, who hasn't won an event this year, hasn't won a PGA Tour event in 7 years, if he wins the Tour Championship, he'll win the whole thing, no matter what DJ does. That's just the quirk of the system. However, I expect Rory McIlroy to have a very good week this week. I think he's one of the few guys that I think is very determined. The money is one thing, but I think it's more about the title. Rory is someone who wants to go out there. He's a four-time major champion. He wants to have achievements. He wants to have a list of accomplishments in his career. He can say, I've won this, I've won that, I've won everything. And he's done most things to do in golf. He's won three of the four majors. He's won the race to Dubai, but he hasn't won the FedEx Cup. So that's the one thing he's yet to do alongside winning the Masters. So when he does that, that's another thing to tick off the list. I think Rory has a determination. Obviously, he played great and he won the BMW, but he wasn't so great when he, you know, the following week his putting went from being great to mediocre, to say the least. So, but if he's worked on that over the last couple of weeks, if he can get that back to where it was a few weeks ago, then he's got a better chance of winning the event. But then, of course, he has to rely on the top five guys not having as great a week. So, obviously, you know, it's in their favour, it's in their control. But I think Rory might win the Tour Championship, and given the results, I think Rory might somehow sneak through and win the FedEx Cup. And wouldn't that be funny when everybody's written about how terrible a year he's had? So, well, you never know what might happen, but for me, Player of the Year, irrespective of what Rory does, irrespective of what Jason Day is, for me, Dustin Johnson is Player of the Season in the PGA Tour by far.
I agree, and I think he's a lock-up, and no matter what he does this weekend, he should be Player of the Year, and he should be the winner of the FedEx Cup. Whether he wins this weekend the tournament or not, I think he's the favorite to win it. Very, very agreeing with that. I don't think that Dustin, the way that he's playing right now, will be losing. If he is to lose, I think that then the most chance I will give it to Jordan Spieth right now. Also Paul Casey, who had eight career rounds there at each lake. He has been in the top five in all eight of them. Jordan Spieth is like a discourse sets up so great for him. I mean, I think he's in a very good position. He's just number seven. So I think those two would be the only ones that I would count Paul Casey and Jordan Spieth. To beat Dustin Johnson, but I think I agree with you both that Dustin Johnson should win it, and he's a lock for the Player of the Year. And I do hate the idea of the match play. because to me it really defeats the purpose of what you've been doing the whole year. You're not playing match play all season. You're going to change for the final event all that you've been doing, which is stroke play, 72 holes, to then start to come and play match play. I don't see how the players would say, hey, I'm not coming here to play two rounds or one round. I want to play the whole weekend. I want to see if I can get a chance. You're taking a lot of the players' chances out, specifically the ones that are 30th or low, the lower ones. You're just saying, hey, you don't have a chance. And that thing about the final day being a mano a mano, to say it that way, right, a duel between two players like it was in the Olympics and in the Open, you run the risk as well from one of the players to blow out the other one and not become interesting at all. If he blows it 6-5 or 5-4 or like that, it will be over sooner rather than later. And I don't think that TV ratings, I think it will suffer more by seeing less people trying to win this. I really don't think it serves the purpose. I really would hate that idea. I really would relish it this way. I really don't think. It's just that you're taking, it's not like the same thing that people, when they were saying that they should put the Olympics in a match play, that's not what you play. You play 72 holes. That's what people are used to see. Okay? So that's what it has to be. The same way that they play all season long, that's what they have to play. You don't have to change anything. But anyway, that's my idea. Two against one, you guys win. But I don't know. I hate it with a passion, that idea.
I think they need to change it up a little bit somewhere along the line.
They need to change it up.
They need to energize
it a little bit. I think we can compromise here, Carlos. Why don't we have a Keith Pelly six-hole challenge then?
For the 10 mil.
That'd be great. Close to the 10. I love that. Let's do that with a game show.
that would be awesome. I go for that. Hey, guys, so we agree to disagree on the match format, but we agree that it should be something.
No, Carlos, we don't agree to disagree. I just disagree. We don't agree to disagree. I disagree entirely with you.
You're
wrong on so many levels. I'm sorry.
Okay. No problem. Yeah, I, too, don't like the FedEx Cup anyway, but, hey, that's what we're stuck up with. Hey, we have to discuss a little bit about the Ryder Cup, and we're going to start with who will be the last pick. Guys, the USA Ryder Cup team captain, Davis Love III, had a get-together for team members at Hazeltine on Sunday and Monday, which was attended by Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Brent Snedeker, Jimmy Walker, Brooks Koepka, and Ricky Fowler. Also in attendance were those players in contention for the final wildcard selection, Daniel Berger, Jim Furyk, Justin Thomas, and Bubba Watson. As you might remember, Watson, the world number 7, was overlooked when Love made his initial three picks last week. So things that make you go, if that is so, does that mean that Ryan Moore and Kevin Na can now just concentrate in the task at hand in the Tour Championship and not worry about making the Ryder Cup team? I mean, is this just a face wash because of the omission of Bubba and not inviting him, even though it's with other players, they're going to pick him anyway? Is the last pick really between these four? Fred, I'm going to turn it over to you first, because then afterwards we're going to go to with Kieran with his take and predictions in the Ryder Cup. But with all this happening, who will be the last pick announced on Sunday? Bubba, Justin, Berger, Furyk, somebody else?
I think it's going to be Bubba. How can you not? You know, we've talked about this before. How can you not pick the number 7 player in the world? You know, it's just like I was looking down through the Tour Championship here, and Russell Knox just jumps out at me. How can Darren Clark not pick Russell Knox? But anyhow, Kevin Na and Ryan Moore, we talked about this last week or the week before. There is no way they would ever get picked. No way. They do not bring enough eyeballs to the event. The PGA of America is all about eyeballs, TV numbers on this event. They want them as big as they can. If they thought there was any way in the world that Tiger Woods could be competitive, he would be the final pick. I'm telling you right now, they would do that. But Bubba's going to bring a lot bigger audience. He's going to bring a lot, you know, the TV wants to cover him. They love covering him, watch him hit those big cuts and big hooks and all that stuff. So, you know, whether he plays good or not, it doesn't matter because he makes good TV. So he's going to be the final pick. If he isn't, I'm going to be really surprised. But, yeah, that's all I got to say about it, Carlos.
Tieran, what's your take on who's going to be the final pick?
Well, I think it's interesting. The conspiracy theorist cynic in me would think that they're trying to make this last pick to be made during the halftime NFL game to be as big a name as he possibly can, which would obviously be Bubba Watson, the two-time Masters champion. People know who he is because of that. He's won the Masters twice, and that's an event that really transcends sport, not just golf in America. So he's a well-known figure. So I think that the cynic in me would think they're just deliberately leaving him to last to make it a big statement on the final day on Sunday in that NFL game at halftime. However, I've heard some sneaky little words by people, some chat, that Justin Thomas has apparently got a very good chance of being picked. I think there's a way he fits in very well with some of the guys who are already on the team. I think they're looking at the way they can bring pairings together. Who do you pair Bubba with? In the past, he's been paired with Webb Simpson. Obviously, he's not there anymore. And Bubba's record in Ryder Cup last time was absolutely terrible. He lost all three matches at Glen Eagles. He hasn't done anything with his form-wise. He hasn't done anything since the spring, since before the Masters. So he's not coming in here with any form at all. That said, neither is Justin Thomas, really. And Daniel Berger, yes, he is to an extent. So those two guys, they are younger, obviously they're hungrier guys. But in the end, if they pick Bubba, 11 of the 12 players have played in Ryder Cups in the past. 11, and 10 of those 12 players have all lost Ryder Cups. J.B. Holmes has played in one Ryder Cup and actually won that. So what have they changed? What, this whole task force nonsense, what is it actually achieved? Should they not try different things because they haven't won a Ryder Cup for so long? Is it not worth experimenting with different things? You know, guys like Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger, they're probably going to be the Ryder Cup team for the next 10 years, 15 years. Do you want to get those guys involved? I think there's a very good chance if either of those two play very well at the Tour Championship that we'll find them actually being picked on Sunday. That said, Cynic Henry does think that Bubba's possibly going to be picked for the slightly commercial reasons, but not so much in terms of driving viewers to the Ryder Cup. People will watch the Ryder Cup regardless of whether Bubba Watson's in it or not, but I think the idea of actually trying to create interest during that NBC halftime game, I think Bubba's the name to do that. However, I would put my money on Justin Thomas, just as a little kind of side bet there. I think Justin Thomas might actually be the pick.
You know, what you said, I think this is all a media attention grab. And I also think that the committee is just a failure thing. I don't know what the heck they're doing. They're just doing all these things are just for media attention. And if they would announce this pick during the Tour Championship, nobody would ever be caring because they were going to be watching football. So that's why they do it there. That thought that you say that they want to have a bigger name there, then I would go to Fred's point. Then why not pick Tiger? Maybe we there's something we don't know. Maybe he's in good shape, you know. And maybe they're going to pick Tiger. That's why they're putting it there. And Bala is going to be out, right? But really
number
has
seven,
to be
number 711 in the world.
Yeah, you know, who knows? Anything can happen, but it's just media attention. It should be Bala. I always said that I would have liked Justin Thomas to be the pick, but he would have to win and win big this Sunday to be picked. I don't see how they're going to pick him. Bubba Watson, his numbers, and this is what it really strikes me, because they're saying that they're going to go with numbers and all that, then Bubba shouldn't be in it. He hasn't won a match, and he won a total of five holes in the 2014 Ryder Cup, which is the lowest percentage of any player. Just 10.9% by more than half. So, I mean, he definitely doesn't fit with anybody else. He might play with whom? I don't know. Because like you said, with Webb Simpson, he's not there anymore. With whom he's going to play? He needs somebody. I think the pairings are already made, like I said last week. The only player I see out right now of the pairings is J.B. Holmes. And they're not going to power this two players together, these two power players. But I would love to see Justin Thomas there. I would love to see it, but I think it's going to be Bubba at the end of the day. I don't know. I can't see anybody else being picked other than Bubba. And if he's not picked, like I said last week, I don't want to hear anybody criticize Darren Clark for not picking Russell Knox. Nobody. 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 That's criticizing Darren
Clark. Oh, I'm gonna keep harping on it.
No.
Well,
you have
Carl,
no
Carl,
point.
Carl, you
have,
remember
you have
six
no
years
point
ago,
because David Slav did the same thing.
Carlos, you may remember 6 years ago, 2010 Ryder Cup, Colin Montgomery, everybody's great friend, he didn't pick Paul Casey, who was world number five. He picked Eduardo Molinari ahead of Paul Casey. So, that is in so many ways a European Tour versus PGA Tour situation there, where Russell Knox, because he was one of these American-based players, essentially a guy who grew up in America, moved there when he was 18, he's not one of the guys. He's not one of the Chubby Chandler crew. And if you're not one of the Chubby Chandler crew, you don't get in.
That's
the fact.
Exactly right.
Chubby Chandler has an awful lot of influence on things in the European Tour, far too much, I say it. And the thing is, you will never see anything negative written by anybody about Chubby Chandler. And for someone in that position of power, that's a very rare thing. And that's a very strange thing, because the guy has so much influence. He's a very, very powerful figure within European golf. And if you're not one of his crew, and also Darren Clark, Lee Westwood, they are his main guys. And if you're not one of those guys, I think that went against Russell Knox. Because obviously, in terms of the quality of his game this year, he should have been in there. If it wasn't for the stupid rules in the first place, he would have been in there anyway. So Russell Knox is there to have a pick. And I think in the end, it comes back to the politics of it. And that ultimately runs through the whole Ryder Cup thing. And in some ways, it ruins it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, but it gives us a lot to talk
San
about.
Diego there. Huh? What?
It gives us a lot to talk about, though, that way.
Well, exactly. It does, doesn't it? So that's the one positive, I guess.
Yeah, it makes it more interesting. And also, Russell's father was born in San Diego. His parents live in the States. The only family member that he has there in Scotland is his sister, Diane, who's a former radio presenter there in Clyde. So she's just in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. But he had everything going against him, and he's just not one of the guys. And the chemistry wouldn't be the same there. He's just not part of that group. Hey, to close up our practice range, let's talk about a little bit about your take and predictions on the Ryder Cup. But let me start by saying that this is going to be interesting, Kieran. I'm all alone, not that it should bother Rory, but he's the sole member of Europe's Ryder Cup team competing in the Tour Championship finale there on the FedEx Cup this weekend. In contrast, eight members of David Slav USA team are in the field. Wow, that right there can spell bad news if you think for the European Tour members who have two other members. Like you mentioned before, Martin Kaymer and Thomas Peters are competing in the Porsche European Open in Griesbach in Germany. But of the six European Ryder Cuppers who use the Italian Open as a final preparatory, Danny Willett, he finished great. He performed the best that second. Only one bogey all weekend. Rafa Cabrera Bello, 12th. Max Fitzpatrick, 15th. Andy Sullivan, Chris Wood, and Martin Kaymer, 20th. They all enjoyed decent tune-ups. Only Lee Westwood missing the cut. But, hey, he's 10th on the race to Dubai. This is just his last tournament. Unfortunately, he didn't play well, but he has been playing well. Danny Willett, he failed his duel with Francisco Molinari. Will serve him well. He's definitely coming into form. We'll know, like we said, on Sunday night, who will be the last pick of the committee. But regardless of who it is, Kieran, for what we know so far, what is your take and predictions for this year's Ryder Cup?
Well, every single time, I always like to predict a draw, because I've always wanted to see what the reaction would be if it finished 14-14. And then my second prediction is always the Americans will win, because I think they have the best team. But somehow the Americans, every single time, seem to conspire in some way or to lose it. They either completely, or to be fair, at Medina in 2012, it was like a miracle. You know, it was just some of the stuff that went against them was ridiculous. You know, the putts Justin Rose made, for example, that day were unreal. So we'll say that they were unlucky in 2012. In 2010, you know, Corey Pavin and his wife beat the stupid waterproof. Did they even work? She wanted to put a label on the back of them and all the rest. So that was a bit of a disaster as well. But that said, they almost won that one. But then 5 years ago, 2 years ago, of course, under Tom Watson at Glen Eagles, well, it all fell apart, of course. You know, Tom Watson has still got the tyre marks on his face after Phil Mickelson threw him under the bus in the press conference after the event. So the Americans somehow, they just seem to get it wrong. They almost take it too seriously in a way, but in a different kind of way. The Europeans obviously take it very seriously. They're very much into it. It's their big event. But the Americans take it seriously in an almost analytical way. They overanalyze everything. And this task force thing plays into that again. You know, what are they all on about? In the end, what are they actually trying to do? They're trying to bring these guys together in different ways and talk about different ideas. Well, you know, Paul Azinger did that 8 years ago, and that worked really well. So why not just do what he did? And in the end, you know, this whole idea that somehow people like to say that the European team get on better than the American team. Is that really true? I think that's up for debate. You can look historically. That hasn't always been the case. You know, there have been many stories in European camps in the past of guys who didn't get on with each other at all. This year, for example, you will
definitely. I thought everybody loved Nick Faldo and Colin Montgomery. You're telling me that's not true?
Well, those two are quite extreme examples, Fred, but you're right. You know, it's like apparently back in 1997, when Seve was the captain, Ian Worthington virtually left the camp during the tournament, and when he got the plane home, he was fed up of Seve Ballesteros holding their hands out all the time. So it all goes on. Even today, you will not see Danny Willett and Andy Sullivan play together. Those two guys do not get along. That goes back to their amateur days. So this whole idea that everybody's lovey-dovey and everybody's best friend isn't true, but somehow, despite that, they come together well enough and they make more putts than the last day. So the thing for the Europeans is, I think there's too many question marks over some of the players, you know, particularly the rookie. You know, Danny Willett's an exception. He's obviously a Masters champion. He's an exception. He's an experienced player now. He's a guy who's played in the biggest stage, won arguably the most prestigious title in golf. So he's got that feather in his cap. But then you have guys like Andy Sullivan, like Matt Fitzpatrick, like Chris Wood, who in reality haven't played that well this summer. You know, Chris Wood had some injury problems. Those guys haven't done anything really since they had their success earlier in the year or even last year when they built most of their points up. And because the system is so weighted towards the European Tour, it favours those guys like to play full time on that circuit. And I put some question marks over those guys. How well are they playing right now? And you throw that into the cauldron of the Ryder Cup for the first time as they're all rookies, then that's a big thing to overcome. And that's three guys already that you're not sure about. Rafa Cabrera-Bello is someone who's very consistent. I think he's someone who will pair up very well with somebody in the foursomes particularly, so he's someone you think will probably do okay. But those are three I'm not so sure about. Lee Westwood, obviously, has had a very mixed year. Also had a great Masters, had a great three rounds at the US Open. But apart from a good finish at Switzerland, he hasn't done that much this year. And is Westwood there just because he's one of the guys? Is he just the experience? Does he bring those kind of intangibles behind the scenes? Well, why not make him a vice-captain then? You've got so many other ones. Why not make him another one? So Westwood, again, is a question mark over him. And even the guys at the top, Henrik Stenson, has been feeling fatigued, injury problems. You know, how's he going to be when he gets there next week? Your Rory McIlroy, is his putter going to work or not? You know, it's been hot or cold all season. When it works, he's great. When it doesn't, he struggles. Who knows? In a match play, you've got to putt well, otherwise you can't win. And that's a major issue. I mean, your number one player, arguably, can't putt as well as he really has to in certain pressure situations. So I think the European team has a lot of question marks over it. The American team, on the other hand, you know, you look at the guys who got there, I think there's guys there who are really hungry for success. I think the likes of Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth, I think those guys are going to bring a lot to it, like they did 2 years ago. You know, Ricky Fowler is someone who hasn't got a great Ryder Cup record, but I think he pairs well with other people. The more experienced heads there, too, are obviously top players. Phil Mickelson, the guy, you know, really, he's someone who has got so much to prove this week. So for me, it's a case of, you know, looking at the two teams, you know, you can say the Americans are favourites on paper, perhaps, but the European team somehow always comes together and does well on the week. But this time, I think the luck may run out. I think the run of wins has to end at some point, and it might just be this week. So if you're hold me down and make a pick, I'm going to say that the American team are going to win. Even if they pick Tiger Woods on Sunday, they're still going to win.
You know, with all that you said, I cannot see how you're picking the U.S. I mean, every single year, the Americans, the Europeans, there are a lot of question marks. Oh, they don't have the right amount of people. They are so low rank, and they have so many things going against them, and they still take the Americans to school, man. It's incredible. And yeah, I know that Henrik Stenson comes from the minor surgery that he had. Chris Wood has just returned from his injury. But, you know, they have some people that are informed. And that thing about being rookies, I don't see a concern about it. I mean, you're talking about six rookies that I don't think they should be an issue or concern at all. They're all experienced. They've won in big stages. Matt Fitzpatrick is great in match play. Tullis Peters is a great form, and he's fearless. I think only Dustin Johnson, I would say, it's in better form right now, coming into the tournament. Than Thomas right now, he's hot right there in the European Tour. Hopefully, he recovered from that beast team that he had in the Netherlands. We'll see this weekend. But I don't see how the Europeans are going to miss this one. Fred, I know he's in favor of the Americans, of course. He's just been saying it, but let me tell you one thing that I didn't say it, and I forgot about this. Davis Love is sticking to his plan from 2012, just as he did when he captained the U.S. Ryder Cup team 4 years ago at Medina. He has elected to play the foursomes to begin Friday and Saturday next week. So they will be followed in the afternoon by the four ball. You might remember last time the Europeans finished 3-0-1 each day in alternate shot. That wasn't good for the Americans. But, you know, back in 2012, it was different because they owned a 5-3 record in those matches and led 8-4 going into Saturday afternoon before they were blown away in the singles. But, Fred, what's your take on the Ryder Cup and Kieran's comments?
Well, I have a question for Kieran, actually. How do you, when you're doing the team matches, so, I mean, you've got six pretty solid guys, except your veterans there. I mean, you got Westwood. What do you do with him? Who do you match him up with? Do you match him up with a rookie and just hope they scratch out a half point every once in a while? Do you leave Sergio playing with, you know, with Rory? Or, you know, do you put Rory and Justin together? Are you going to load up with three veterans? You're going to load up with three veteran teams, and the other team just throw a couple guys out there, and if they happen to get a point, great. Or you're just going to plan, and they're going to probably lose that. I don't see how he makes these. I don't see how he picks these teams. It looks really difficult to me for Darren Clark.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Fred. I think the conventional wisdom nowadays is after what happened in '99. When Mark James left out Andrew Coulthard and Jean Van de Velde and Jarmo Sandlin until the last day, three rookies, didn't play them at all in the first two days. That seems to have been, ever since then, captains have then are focused on trying to make sure the rookies are actually out at least by the second morning. But you're doing that almost to the detriment of the team, potentially. You know, if you have an experienced partnership, whether it be Rory and Justin or maybe Sergio and Stenson, or even Sergio and Justin Rose, you know, those two guys might play together. You might see Danny Willett play or Justin Rose, you know, two Olympic competitors for Great Britain back in August. So, but then if you're going to try and fit in Andy Sullivan or Matt Fitzpatrick, you know, who are you going to pair them with? You know, as you see Lee Westwood, but is that going to be a dynamic duo to go up against a strong American pairing? I think there are real question marks as to who they're going to put out there and pair together. You know, Martin Kramer's a very useful player. I think Martin Kramer will actually be the most important experienced player, particularly in the foursomes, where he's a very useful player to have in that. So I think he will be useful there. But elsewhere, you know, Thomas Peters, I think, is going to be potentially, like Carlos mentioned, the one rookie that really shines. He's such a great game. He's obviously a lot of experience in America, having gone to college there, and he's very powerful and suits that kind of style of golf. So I think he will do well. But I have question marks about Andy Sullivan, Chris Wood, Matt Fitzpatrick, to a lesser extent Rafa Cabrera-Bello, and even Lee Westwood, even, you know, Martin Kramer at times. His chipping isn't that great. He has an issue with it. The rest of his game's fine, but his short game is patchy, to say the least, so that could be an issue in certain formats. And Ian Rory, the experienced guys, the Stenson, question marks there. Sergio, you know, he's in or out, but Sergio is not the same guy he was 10 years ago. You know, when he was young, dynamic, and he was really a heartbeat of the European team. you're almost missing a guy like Poulter. You know, those, you know, not the Poulter of now, but the Poulter of 5-6 years ago, a guy who has that real edge to him. I'm not sure the European team necessarily has that sort of charismatic leader figure that they've had in the past. What someone like, even like guys like Seve or Olafabo or even Nick Faldo and Colin Montgomery, you know, even though they weren't great personalities and popular as such, they all turned it on for the Ryder Cup. I don't think they have that right now. And the American team, you know, I think if they get their pairings right, you know, they've got a task force, they've thought an awful lot about it, see who they pick on Sunday. And I think there are more natural pairings in the American team than there are in the European team right now. But again, it comes back to the intangibles, where somehow, despite all, as Carl said, all the question marks, Europe somehow seems to always come together. Apart from that time in 2008 when they had calamitous Nick Faldo as captain, but apart from that, they always seem to be competitive at worst. And they probably will be this time. But I just think, you know, the law of averages say the Americans got to win at some point again. And I think they were very unlucky under Davis Love 4 years ago. I think that was a freak result, really. But in the end, the captains themselves are how much control or influence do they really have? You know, Paul Laurie, who played in 2 Ryder Cups for a year, he played in 1999 under Mark James and in 2012 under Jose Maria Olafabo. 2 very similar results where either team, the Americans, might have had a great comeback, and then 2012, the Europeans had a great comeback, of course. But who was the better captain? Mark James, who lost, or Olafabo, who won? You ask Paul Laurie, one of the honest guys in the European Tour, Mark James was a much better captain than Olafabo. So how much power do the captains really have? I think this year the Americans are making more of a team effort, where they're obviously spending time this week out at Hazeltine, they're getting ready for it, they're getting kind of comfortable with each other and talking through pairings. And I think they're putting in attention to detail now that the Europeans did under Paul McGinley. They're following that kind of model, that kind of succession model, and they're building on the good stuff of the past and trying to try some new things as well. So I think the American team are well placed, and I think there are fewer question marks over them than there are the European team. And Fred, I agree with you. I think there are issues with the pairings. I'm not sure what Dan Clark's going to do. I'm not sure how he fits in all these rookies. To me, Russell Knox would have been a perfect guy for the Ryder Cup team, a guy who has a really good all-round game. You need those kind of grinding players to have in your team, and he's one of them. I think the European team has too many guys who are too similar as golfers, and I don't think that will suit them in both formats.
I agree.
I think, yes, they do have a problem. But I think, you know, with who Sergio is going to play with his countryman, with Rafa Cabrera Bello, I think that's how they're going to pair him. Westwood, to me, I see him with Danny Willett playing. Okay? To me, the pairings, I would see, like, Rory maybe playing with Martin. I don't see that far-fetched. Henrik playing with Thomas Peters. Justin with Matthew. Sergio with Rafa, and then you just give away Andy and Chris with pairing, because I don't see how they fit with anybody else, but that's how I see them. I don't know. I just don't see them losing. There's just the additive thing, like you just mentioned at the beginning, the U.S. just takes this too analytically, and they always find a way to lose it. They just have to relax and go out there and have some fun and play. And the other thing is they're playing at home. The pressure is all in the U.S. It's not in the Europeans. It's on the U.S. They have all this committee thing, everything that they have been doing. They have the pressure that if they perform wrong, they perform bad, who are they going to blame now? Okay, it has to be them. It's the committee side. So it's a lot of things going to. I just don't see that many things going against the Europeans. But we'll see next week. It's just 1 week away, the Ryder Cup. Let's take our last short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our final putt, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for a final putt. I'm going to start right away telling you that, you know, in an appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres show last Tuesday, the reigning two-time MVP, Stephen Carey, he discussed playing golf with President Barack Obama and received some trash-talking tips from none other than the First Lady, Michelle Obama. At Ellen's encouragement, the First Lady did give Carey some trash-talking tips for the next match, and she advised him to, and I quote, talk about his ears. If you're putting, you say to him, the shadow from your ears is really messing up my putt, end of quote. You know, Carey, who sports a 2 handicap, says he's a better golfer than Obama, but wouldn't say what the president's handicap is, and then jokes saying, I was told not to disclose that information. If he knows best, he wouldn't say that, and he wouldn't trash talk either. Otherwise, we might not see him again, you know. They might have to kill him. But anyway, there's some other news also. The island nation of Aruba, one of my favorite places in the world, and I've been there many times, has become one of the most sought-after vacation destinations in the world. And now it's also become a professional golf destination when the PGA Tour Latin America and the McKinsey Tour, which is the PGA Tour Canada, unveiled last Tuesday the Aruba Cup, which is a team competition that will be played December 12th to the 18th at the marvelous and beautiful Tierra del Sol Resort and Golf in Aruba. A 3-year agreement will see the team event take place through at least 2018, featuring 10 players from each tour competing against each other in a President's Cup-style match play event, with the 3 competition days featuring 4-ball, foursomes, and single matches on December 15, 16, and 17 of this year. You know, I like the initiative. I think it's great for the development of the players in those tours and to grow the game in Latin America, which is a territory that's ready to be exploited. Now, like I said, I've been many times to Aruba, both for business and leisure. Have played in that golf course. It's great for those tours, but I wonder what the focus they're going to have with so many beaches. You know, there's no nightlife, but plenty of sand and some to get lost in, if you know what I mean. So, okay, be careful, guys. I can be your tour guide if you want. I can sacrifice myself and go there and show you around. The whole island can be running just less than an hour. So it's that small. But anyway, finally, Hallie Ledbetter, the daughter of noted instructor David Ledbetter, has turned professional and will be trying to qualify for the Ladies European Tour, where her mother, Kelly, won the 1986 Hennessy Tournament. For what is reported, as a child, she had little to no interest in golf and dedicated to her first love, which is horse riding. But eventually, she decided to give golf a chance and began working with her dad. She had just graduated from Rollins College, worked for 3 months with Excel Sports, and then suddenly she decided to give professional golf a whirl. She competed in her first event as a pro just 2 weekends ago at a pro-am at Oakland Hills, where she earned her first check of $1,500. Kieran, looks to me like she might have talent. Lydia Coe even went as far as to say that she'll do well at wherever she decides to play. I was excited for her. Of course, she's Lydia is teached by David Ledbetter. But to me, it seems as to how much that she really wants to be dedicated by herself to the sports, because being a professional golfer requires too many sacrifices, and the jury will be out on whether she wants it bad enough or not, Kim.
Yes, but Carlos, you know, Lydia would be very nice about it, because one, you know, Lydia's a very nice girl and she's a very nice person, but also she doesn't want, you know, David to completely destroy her game, does she? So she's going to be very complimentary, of course. But speaking of Lydia, she features in my section of the final putts in a rather kind of strange story, I must admit. And of course, Lydia, who of course is, you know, arguably the best young player in the history of the women's game, you know, remarkable talent, set so many records, and just, you know, a phenom in so many ways. You know, she's a likable character, a brilliant golfer, has a fantastic personality, really should be a great marketable figure. And she is, for Evian, of course, sponsor and run the Evian Championship last week. And Lydia is actually the face, literally, to an extent, of Evian's Live Young campaign, where they're distributing 7 million bottles of water every single day around the planet with Lydia's face and signature on it. Well, but is it Lydia's face? Well, not really. It's Lydia as a baby on it, but it's not really Lydia as a baby with a golf hat on. It's actually a computer-generated a vision of what Lydia Ko would have looked like as a baby with a golf hat on. So I must confess, there's a little bit of the kind of Victor Frankenstein sort of thing going on here with the creating golfers when they're young and putting them on water bottles. I think this is kind of the world is ending, I think. And Lydia Ko, a computer-generated version of Lydia Ko being on a water bottle, I think, you know, the world's gone a bit too far. But Lydia's there, she's very marketable, and she's selling, you know, all the water, and it's getting her name out there, and, you know, that's a good thing for the game, of course, but it's a little bit odd having a computer-generated baby. I don't know how they work that one out, but, you know, we can only speculate. And also, speaking of other strange goings-on, or maybe in this case more of a strange character, Jim Nance, the famed CBS announcer and, you know, let's be honest, real-life cartoon character that he really is, he is to receive a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Golf Coaches Association of America. Yeah, that's wonderful. I haven't heard of them either. He played on the University of Houston golf team back in the day, of course, with Fred Couples being there as well. They were great buddies, which Jim likes to mention only maybe five times an hour every single day. And he joins the likes of Byron Nelson, Arnold Palmer, and Jack Nicklaus in receiving this award for what it is. So Jim Nance will be very pleased, and hello, friends, indeed.
Hello.
No, Jim deserves all those accolades and all that.
Yeah, of course. Fred. Of course he does, absolutely.
Hey, Fred. Are you there, Fred?
I am here, yes.
Oh, okay. To wrap up, do you have any final comments would you like to say? By the way, did any of you... I know you might want to have some Ambien refill before seeing Tim Fincham's final season ending address to the media that he did today, but I don't know if you watched it. It took less than 4 minutes. He made a record after, you know, he took only like 4 minutes talking about himself, so, and his accolades and all that, but he mentioned that Tiger Woods' contribution to the game, which coincided with his tenure, of course, and he called him the greatest player of all time. Did you guys saw that?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
There was a guy here. There was a guy here from Ohio. I think he won 18 majors. He might be just a little bit better. And he played a few more years. Of course, he didn't take PEDs, and, you know, he didn't bang up his legs and stuff. But yeah, Tiger was pretty good, though. He was pretty good.
Before
I let that go, though, I do have to say that, you know, Tim Fincham has done, you know, he's not an exciting character. He's very low-key, you know, to say the least, right? But you know what? He has done a fantastic job balancing the tour players, the sponsors, the tournament directors, you know, just all the things that go in that he has to balance, the financing. The tour makes so much money. And, you know, we talked about it some time ago about the money that's in the players' retirement fund. And he has enhanced that the time that he's been there. These TPC courses, and I mean, those are real money generators. And so he is to be commended. He has been a truly great commissioner. He's not flashy, you know, but he is really done. He's a really good manager.
So, Kieran, any final words before I close the show?
I would just say to compromise on the Phil Nicholas, or the Jack Nicklaus Tiger Woods debate. I don't know why Phil came in the head there, but Jack Nicklaus film, Tiger Woods debate, is getting late in the day. I would say one thing, you know, Jack is the greatest ever player, but I think Tiger, at his very best, has played golf better than anyone else ever did. That's how I'd compromise it.
Just a shorter period of time, yeah. I know. I don't really disagree with you, but you have to look, if you look at body of work, Tiger's health, you know, just went against him. And Jack had a little longer career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report. Special thanks to Kieran Clark for being here with us one more time. We look forward for your next flawless, incredible broadcast with us. So thank you, Kieran, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Hey, my name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader and Kieran Clark. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and, hey, enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Cheers, guys.